Greetings. Welcome back to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, as always, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my the war room of my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. Someday I'm going to get the tagline for this podcast correct. But it is not this day. And this day happens to be August 24th, 2022, another 15 days flatten the curve here in the great state of Washington, still under the emergency power declaration by our illustrious governor, Jay Inslee. I have no known title for this podcast. The Indecisive Podcast. I don't know. I don't care. I'm indecisive. So we'll call it The Indecisive. Actually, ironically enough, I just came up with the idea for the podcast title. So being indecisive, I'm not so indecisive. I don't know. It's early in the morning. Deal with it. I got my tea. I got the fan going because it's hot outside, even though it's early in the morning. I'm not complaining because we had the worst spring weather humanly possible. And I made an oath to myself. I said, TJ, you're not to ever complain. After like 30 to 40 days of straight rain all day, every day, I just vowed I'm never going to complain about the weather if it's hot and sunny outside during the summer. White boy summer two. It has been a while since my last podcast because I got other stuff going on, as you might imagine. I was off visiting relatives in California, and that was fun. It was also hot and sunny there. It was like 107 degrees, which is fine. I'm not complaining. The only thing I'm complaining about is the fact that I cannot get an entire tan. There's certain, like, my face gets a whiff of sun and immediately becomes golden brown. My chest, for whatever reason, will not tan. I've tried. So the farmer's tan thing is a real thing, and it's probably going to become permanent, but there are worse problems, I suppose. Yes, and since it's been sunny outside, I have been following the white boy summer rule number one, which is if the sky's blue and wide, you ride. So I've been riding my motorcycle. I probably have ridden my motorcycle more in the past month than I rode it in the prior 2 years. I think I went for, 2.5 weeks without ever using my SUV. Now, I might have used it for some minor thing where I needed to move it. You know, I got to pick something up at the store and you can't put it in your backpack. So, yes, I may have used it once or twice, or maybe when it gets late at night. I won't ride my motorcycle in the dark. And there's various reasons. One, I live off of a state highway that is one of the most dangerous in the state. And I just don't like riding at night. It's the visibility factor is just a huge, huge problem. You never know what you're going to find around the bend of the road. One of the more recent, I don't want to say announcements, but changes is I started to pick up fiction writing again. I've been reading the short stories, Ron Howard, not Ron Howard, the director, Robert Howard. I got the book right in front of me. Sorry. Brain, wake up. Robert E. Howard's Savage Tales of Solomon Kane. And they've been pretty good. I like his style. He's got a good prose. It's very pulpy. So I was reading it and I was thinking, you know, there's a bunch of cool story ideas I had for Amos Cavendish, who was in my novella, The Pilgrim's Digress. And what's interesting about that book, if you haven't bought it, you need to go buy it right now. Like, pause this podcast episode, go on Amazon. You can order it. You can even order it directly to your Kindle. All you have to do is a few clicks on the mouse and you have that book in your hands. Don't read it right now. You just buy it right now and then you can read it after you're done listening to this podcast. And the interesting thing about this book that I think will throw many people off, not in a bad way, but just will surprise them, is it's not a book about religion or theology or spirituality. It's really a political book. And maybe to some extent cultural and social, but mainly a political book. It's a book about politics and political philosophy and stuff like that. It's not really, there's not a lot of theological stuff and there's not a lot of spirituality. And so I was thinking that that might have been, it's not something I regret not putting, I don't regret keeping those things out of the book because it wasn't the type of book I wanted to write. But what I found interesting as I was working on some of the ideas for short stories is I wanted them to be a little bit more pulpy and a little bit more over the top. And I felt like the world I had created allowed for that. So I've been working on some of the pulp stories. And before you're asking, TJ, I thought you said you were done writing fiction. Yes, I know. I am, again, the indecisive episode. TJ, you said you were going to stop doing your podcasting. And then you went, yes, I know. This is why I stopped saying I'm never going to do something again. I stopped writing fiction. I think part of it was mainly just a creativity thing. I really did not have the creative inspiration to write. I didn't know how, the kind of style. Sometimes I just need to take time to just think about what I'm going to write and not like literally what I'm going to write, but what kind of a world is it and what kind of style, like what kind of a style story. And when I realized I was going to do pulp, that's where I finally got the idea of, okay, this is how it's going to go down. It's going to be a little bit more over the top. It's going to be a little bit weirder. It's going to lean more towards the weird horror supernatural type stuff that you would read in Solomon Kane. It's going to have my own little twist on it because it's not going to be, this is one of the more fascinating parts of the comparison because people have compared Amos Cavendish to Solomon Kane. There's actually quite a few differences between them. I think the one of the main ones is Solomon Kane is a wanderer. He has wanderlust. He's from England, but he really can't stay in England very long. He can stay there for a few months and then he's got to go out and he goes to all these exotic locations. He goes to Africa. He goes to the Caribbean to fight buccaneers and pirates. He encounters all these very weird, strange monsters and villains in different parts of the world. You know, most of the stories I've been reading so far have been occurring elsewhere. So he's more of an adventurer, and he also doesn't have any family. In contrast, Amos Cavendish, if you have not read the book, we're going to take a brief pause to allow you to buy it. Okay, now that you've bought it, Amos Cavendish has a family, at least at this point in the book or in the short stories. And his main focus is actually on Cambridge County, which is where he lives. He's not really interested in, the world. It reminds me of a line from the movie Cromwell, which is ironically also about Puritans. And Cromwell's talking to this guy named Henry Ireton, which is a fictional depiction of an actual historical character. And he says to him, you know, you're a young man. It's fitting that a young man should want to change the world. And Henry Ireton replies, not the world, sir, only England. And so that's Amos Cavendish's mindset is, I'm not here he's not trying to change the world. He's only trying to protect Cambridge County. That's his focus. So he's much more insular in his view of where his focus is. He's not trying to be he's not an adventurer. He's not out in the world trying to fight evil wherever it may be. He's only interested in his own area. And it really fits his character because this is a guy who, you know, if you've read the books or the novella, not the books, and you read the short stories, he really fundamentally is a guy who just wanted to be left alone and was instead prompted and provoked into taking action. And he's one of those guys, the analogy has been given before, but it's where you have people who emotionally and psychologically are like a thermostat. You can turn up the temperature and then quickly turn it back down to like, you know, 40 degrees. And then you can turn it up to 80 degrees and then back down very, very quickly. So they can be very angry one moment and then they can be very, very calm and happy 5 minutes later. Guys like Amos are more like a light switch. Once you flip the light is either on or off. And it's not like one of those theater lights where you can, you know, have dim, but it's still on. He's more of a traditional light, to use the analogy. Once you flip the switch on, he's in a certain emotional state and it's not changing. So he's one of those guys where he snapped in an emotional sense and he's never gotten out of that mindset where he's never going to go back to being I just want to be left alone. I'm not trying to interfere in anybody's lives. Now he's got the kind of the crusader, he's got the Solomon Kane kind of fanatical ideology, whatever. And there was a passage in Howard's book that really summed up the kind of characteristics and qualities of these type of characters. And I think that's much of what drives Amos's behavior. Is he's going after people, the villains, who in the context of the story are the passive, I want to be left alone. But in the context of the plot, they were the ones hunting him down and persecuting him during what I've titled the turbulent era. And honestly, if the only good that comes out of the Pilgrim's Digress is one day somebody is inspired to use that to describe our current era, I will die a happy man. All right. If the only thing I do and accomplish in my life, actually, I want to accomplish more things. I'm not going to lie. I'm being indecisive right now. This is the Indecisive Podcast. Is I would love to have this era coined the turbulent era. Because it really describes what is going on. It's just a ton of chaos. Like culturally, socially, religiously, politically, there is chaos. This is a turbulent period in Western history, but it's also a turbulent period in American history. I'm not going to go, for people who might be wondering, I'm not going to go too much in cancer. I'm not going to go too much into politics in these books. This is where it's going to be more pulpy and kind of looking at the macabre, and it's going to be, I'd say, a little bit more, I don't want to say uplifting. It's not going to be a Hallmark Channel movie, and it's not going to be a Thomas Kinkade painting. It's going to be more of, I'd say, a little bit more aggressive than the Solomon Kane stories. And it's going to have a different bent to it. Because it revolves around him collecting bounties. So, you know, Amos Cavendish is a bounty hunter. He's going after people who have bounties placed on them. And unlike Solomon Kane, who's just looking for evil for the purpose of just fighting evil. Like, he doesn't have an end goal. Amos Cavendish's end goal is to just purge Cambridge County of threats to its societal, cultural, and political stability. So he's trying to bring order and structure back to an area that had been in a state of chaos. So there's going to be this linear progression and development where you see noticeable changes in the environment that he operates in, as opposed to Solomon Kane, where there's no continuity between, well, actually there is. He has that I don't know what it means, but the fetish stave, it's like this huge staff that has dark powers that he gets in one short story and he carries with him for the rest of it. So I guess there's some of that, but not as much as there's going to be in these stories. And another reason why I decided to pick it up writing is because I was, when I wanted to write pulp stories, I was thinking, okay, where's a good magazine or a good, like, where it's specifically for pulp? And there was one place that I found that I've submitted the short story to, so we'll see what they have to say, if they like it. And that's the other thing. I'm not writing them in advance a whole lot. I'm doing some of them as an aside thing, as far as just, I'm waiting to see what the response is going to be. Because if there's a strong demand for it, then I'll do it. But this is, I guess, where I'm at in life is, and I was talking about this with a buddy the other day, is if there's not a demand for something that exists, it's really risky to create the product. Because then you have to go out and try and sell it. As opposed to where there's demand for a product, you create it or offer it or provide it, it's a service or good, and you don't have to sell it because people already want it. Or maybe you don't have to sell, you have to sell it in the sense of like, why should they buy the product, that product from you? It just makes it easier for you to sell it, and also the context is a little bit different. Because then if there's no demand for the product at all, you got to sell both the product and yourself. So yeah, there's other stuff that I could talk about. I'll tell you what I am going to talk about. I'm going to talk about why I'm not talking about stuff anymore. I've kind of semi-retired from discussing certain things. And one of them is, this is something that I'm coming to at this point in my life, is realizing that for some people, it's like the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, where there's the dog and he's got the keys in his mouth, and the guys who are in the jail cell are offering him the bone. And obviously, the dog never moves. He just stands there and is just looking at them, right? And in the movie, The Pirates of the Caribbean, Johnny Depp's character, Jack Sparrow, says, you can keep wagging that bone. That dog is never going to move. And I feel like that's really describes a lot of people today, where you try to have conversations with them. You try to have discussions about stuff, particularly, and in this case that I'm talking about, is macro issues. Macro issues like major issues that affect the whole of society, the whole of the culture, the whole of the country, your community, whatever it is. It's an issue that is affecting everyone. And you can have conversations with people in both, you know, in, among a group or among individuals, but nothing changes. And moreover, if you have the solution to a problem, then sell it. Because that's kind of where I'm going at. And I'm not trying to sell something right now. When I'm to either you or anybody else, I'm just saying, if I'm going to talk about it, I'm going to get paid. Because this is the thing about me that I think separates me from other, not everyone, but just other people in general, is I put a lot of thought into what I have to say. I spend a lot of time thinking about stuff and forming an opinion that is rooted in, you know, my research and investigation and all that lovely stuff. Other people don't really put any time or effort. And then they say things that are incredibly ignorant, or they say things that just, they just say something for the purpose of having an opinion. The other problem is you don't ever have a debate with someone who has a strong incentive of one kind or another for you to be wrong. Because even, let's say, even if you were to say you were right, but this current, and what I mean by this is the current situation, the status quo where you're pointing out problems benefits them. What incentive do they have to change the status quo to their detriment? And people are not having these discussions with the, it's just so, I'd say, deceitful. People are not having these discussions with the intent of, hey, if you present sufficient facts, evidence, proof, logic, and reason, I will change my mind and change my behavior. No, it's people just trying to justify what they're doing because it benefits them. I mean, this is kind of just the realities. People do what benefits them. Whether it's good for the whole society, whether it's good for even themselves in the long term, they're taking the path of least resistance. They're also and they're taking the easy route, and they're doing what benefits them. So you can sit there and explain to people why it's not good or why it's bad, or the more importantly, and here's the part where we're really going to get at. You know, in a lot of cases, the ship hit the iceberg and now it's sinking, and people want to have a discussion about, you know, who's responsible, right? It's just like, nobody's going to be interested in getting on a lifeboat. Nobody's going to be interested in, you know, that's not the time to have that discussion. The question is, what do you do? Well, you get on a lifeboat, you row as far away from the ship as possible, and you make sure that some of the people who didn't have the good sense to get in a lifeboat don't capsize your boat by climbing in. I mean, to put it as in a crude analogy. Because some of these topics I've been discussing with people for a really long time, because I saw the bridge was out, miles away from where the train is headed, right? Or where the train is. And it's headed directly toward the bridge. Hey guys, the bridge is out. We should slow down the train, right? Did anybody listen? No. Did it benefit me to talk about it? No. Did I make any money off of it? No. You know, people are, they bring up opinions on social media, and then they're just looking for someone to disagree with them so that they can lash out at them. And my thought is just don't be that guy. Unless you're going to be able to monetize it. I mean, this is what I'm going to start telling people kind of in a joking, half-joking manner, but I'm actually kind of serious. TJ, what's your opinion on this, or what do you think about that? Well, I can tell you, but you're going to have to pay me. Because worst case scenario, you get mad at me, but I still get paid. Like there's no benefit. And this is kind of just a life lesson I would impart. You know, get back in that DeLorean, go 88 miles per hour, make sure you have extra plutonium on your, so you can get back to your own time. Go back in time, chat with my younger self, and just say, how would I put this to him? You don't have to get people to agree with you to go do whatever it is that you wanted. Or I guess when there's a, societal problems are not your problems to solve. They're just not. It's not your job to save the ship from sinking. It's not your job. Like, just get in a lifeboat. And you don't have to have a group conversation about it. Just get in a lifeboat. If the ship's sinking, get on a lifeboat. If the train is headed towards the bridge that's about to be out, and the train conductor or engineer is not stopping the train, get off the train. And if people want to come with you, but they're going to want to have a debate about why you shouldn't get off the train and why you should stay on the ship and why get into life, like all this other stuff. They want to have a discussion and just keep talking, and you realize that dog is never going to move. To use the jail analogy, the dog is never going to move, so you're going to need to find another way to get out of the jail cell. You're going to have to dig your way out. You're going to have to climb out the window. You're going to have to do something. What you are not going to do is keep wagging the bone in front of the dog in the futile hope that it will move. So to give the analogy, to continue with this analogy, you're going to need to be the prisoner who walks away from the others as they insist that you just stay there. Hey, any minute this dog is going to move and come to us with the keys and we're going to get out. You know, don't go anywhere. Don't do anything. Don't say, like, just stay here. Because if you leave, the dog will never move. And I'm not talking about like personal relationship type stuff. I'm talking about where people are having conversations about problems that started a long time ago and were really starting to feel the effects. Of all these horrible decisions and bad life choices that have been made by millions of people, and now we're starting to see the consequences. And instead of making changes to their behavior, admitting mistakes, and moving forward, everybody's looking for a way to justify how they weren't wrong and how they're like, it's somebody else's fault. And you come to this really painful realization that they are never going to change. They're going to continue to justify themselves forever. And no, and I'm not talking, again, not individuals. I'm talking about just groups of people in mass. This is where I said on other podcasts, there is no collective solution to any collective problem. Because the collective group, the collective whole is not going to change. The only solution is on an individual level. You know, there is no collective solution for making housing or homes more affordable for people in my generation. There's only individual solutions. There's no collective solution for raising the marriage rates and having people marry younger, or people my age who are all trying to settle down and get married and have a family and have all these dysfunctions. There is no collective solution. There is only individual solutions. There is no collective solutions for how to deal with the whole economy right now. There's only individual solutions. Anybody who tells you that they have the solution for a large group of people is selling you snake oil. They're selling you a Brooklyn Bridge. They're selling you, you know, beachfront property in Kansas. Unless this person says, hey, I don't have specific solutions. I have some general ideas or general mindsets that can help you figure it out. I have suggestions, not prescriptions. And some of the prescription or some of the general guidelines are pretty obvious. It's the actual implementation that gets difficult, and people are not going to have solutions for you because they don't know what they're talking about too often, and two, they have zero interest in learning the facts on the ground. It's no different from a general telling his troops to go across no man's land and assault the German fortifications and is completely uninterested in all the quagmire, the barbed wire, the barricades, the, you know, barriers, and the machine guns and the artillery. Like, no, no, no. You just need to walk across no man's land and get to the other side. How difficult is that? Well, kind of difficult. And there's no collective way, solution for how the soldiers are going to get across that no man's land and into the enemy fortifications. It's an individual basis. One man zips or zags, another guy ducks and dodges, another guy crawls through filth, another guy just runs for dear life and manages to avoid getting shot. And so this is why I just don't talk about this stuff anymore, because there's no benefit to me discussing these things when I see people, you know, beginning to say stuff, because also they're not addressing, they're not changing anything. They think that just talking, it's such a weird concept for me to witness, is where people think that them speaking either changes reality, determines reality, or can cause other people to actually take action. And yes, I understand that people can take action based on what someone says. I'm talking about where it's like someone's in prison and you're saying you need to escape and thinks that that's alone going to get them to escape. No, there's other problems in the way. And nobody wants to talk about it because nobody wants to admit just how much of a snafu it is. I mean, we're talking in terms of like, it's a neutron bomb is what it is. And it's ironic, I've spent the last couple of minutes talking about why I don't want to talk about this stuff, and then I end up talking about it, but because again, this is the Indecisive Podcast. But no, I will not be discussing these things on other podcasts in the future. I don't want to say I never will, but I probably won't. I've learned never to say never. But if somebody says, TJ, what's your PayPal? I will send you $100 if you talk about this topic on your podcast, and I will talk about it on my podcast. Again, if people want to pay me, I will talk about this stuff and I will share my insight and I will share my so-called wisdom and my perspective, but I'm not going to do it if I'm not getting paid. Like, if I had gotten paid every time I talked about my opinion and it got, you know, it got a narcissistic rage in response, I would be living on a beach earning 20%, like Hans Gruber didn't do, because he messed with the wrong cop. Anyways, on that note, I think we'll end this podcast here. So thank you for listening. You can get the other episodes at tjmartinell.com, along with my books, which you have bought, The Pilgrim's Digress, I presume. If you haven't, I don't know if I can continue to have you as my reader. We might let it go on this one, but by the next episode, you should have it, a copy in your hand or on your Kindle. So thank you for listening to this episode of the Mountain Pass Podcast, The New Adventures. I will get the tagline right one day. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room and my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia, signing off.